On the clock. Okay, almost on the clock. Welcome, Bird Gang. On today's show, Danny Sarek joins me. The draft is just about here. One last day before the big day. One last day of speculation. And honestly, is there a scenario that hasn't been thought about or discussed yet? It's Cardinals Cover 2, Episode 748, and it starts now.
Welcome to Cardinals Cover 2.
Buda Baker, what heart, what threat. This guy's unbelievable.
Cardinals Cover 2 is presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals, and by Arizona Cardinals Podcasts. Visit azcardinals.com/podcast.
He's at the 10, at the 5, he's in again! Some more Murray magic!
Wow!
Here's Craig Grealou.
Are you ready, Danny?
I'm so ready for the draft, Craig. You have no idea. One last time to speculate.
I am right there with you. It's going to be a busy, fun, and dare I say, perhaps franchise-changing 3 days, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Ooh, I like the sound of that.
Feel free to use that during our Draft Central show on Friday.
Our live stream show, Friday,
3 p.m. on the Arizona Cardinals YouTube channel.
How about that? Talking not only about the first picks from round one, however many that may be, actually talking to the picks and the head coach and general manager and all kinds of stuff on that show before looking ahead to day two.
We'll have Paul Calvisi joining us as well, again, 3 p.m. on Friday. You said now first round picks, as in plural.
As of now, yes. That's what I would imagine still.
Okay, and I do too.
It's a matter of how many picks?
Two versus three. Versus what I read earlier on Wednesday, the potential of just one. ESPN's Matt Miller, his latest and final mock draft. In fact, we'll hear from Matt in a moment here on Cardinals Cover 2, presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. He has MHJ, Marvin Harrison Jr., selected at number 4, and then a trade out of the first round with that 27th pick to the Raiders for a 44th overall selection, so a second-round pick. And then a future second-round pick.
Huh.
I had not anticipated that or
thought
about that.
You're giving up a first for 2 seconds?
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Not enough for you?
Absolutely not enough for me. What's the value of a second-round pick next year versus a first-round pick this year?
No, you get a first-round, a second round this year,
right?
And a second round in 2025. So you get two second round picks,
right?
But to your point, you're dropping out of the first round, going from 27 to 44 in a future.
In this case, you already have multiple second round picks, and while those have a lot of value in every draft, and really in this draft when you're considering how deep some of these classes are and how they fit with the needs the Cardinals have, I don't like the idea at all of moving out of the first round. Again, because of how deep this class is, that you can still get a top player that is likely going to fall more than they would in another draft class if this weren't so wide receiver or offensive tackle heavy at the top end.
I can see a lot of teams like the Raiders trying to get back into the first round, especially those 25 to 32 picks, because you get that fifth year option that you potentially could utilize, and all of a sudden you've got control for 5 years versus four. And teams, I wouldn't say gamble, but try to get back in just based off that fifth-year option. But I'm like you. I would anticipate three first-round picks rather than one first-round pick.
Yeah, that would seem more likely to have three rather than one.
And are we completely ruling out the four first-round draft picks? Just for selfish reasons and workflow for the digital content and creative team.
Yeah, I'd be happy capping it at three from a selfish standpoint.
But taking one for the team, four.
Sure. Better than one.
A couple of offensive players, a couple of defensive players. You just talked about how deep this draft class is.
Yeah, we'll sleep after the draft. I'd rather have four than one.
Could we pull an all-nighter to get ready for Friday?
Never done well with all-nighters.
Oh, no?
Even if it's just like an hour nap. Never, my body has never functioned at all when I am on no sleep.
Speaking of that, I'm taking a huge left-hand turn here, but I have figured out I need no more than 7 hours. If I get any more than 7 hours of sleep, I'm just not, my body just doesn't feel good.
It's too much. Interesting.
Now, we have a colleague that tries to get 12 hours every single night.
What?
Yeah. Found that out earlier this week.
12 hours? How's that even possible?
I have no idea. But that is just, wait, that's literally half the day. You've wasted half the day.
That doesn't seem right.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was told, so. All right. So we're anticipating at least two, perhaps three first-round picks. Overall, though, 11 selections is what the Cardinals have right now as we speak on this Wednesday. Six in the first 90, two in the first round. 11 picks is the most of any team in the league. And if you're the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, Monty Austin Ford, you have 11 opportunities right now to really bolster your offense around Kyler Murray and really improve your defense as far as getting some young talent in a side of the ball that did get a lot of reinforcements already in free agency, but that was maybe more of a 1-2 year fix. More like with the draft, you're talking about, hopefully, that they're all successful 4, 5, 6 years down the road. If they're not day one starters, they're rotation pieces.
Yeah, I don't think it's realistic to expect that 11 of these picks are going to be here for 4 to 6 years. That's not realistic. Now, having that many picks does give you a greater number to kind of hit on of having good picks. And even if they're not starters, being good rotational pieces, which are also important, having this much capital also allows Austin Fort to set the Cardinals up for future drafts if he wants. I'm talking later rounds of making trades where right now the Cardinals have 6 picks in the 2025 draft, and maybe we see him make some trades to kind of get ahead a little bit of that because they have the capital to do that, to still address the needs and make the team better while also looking ahead a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a few deals like that to kind of look ahead with draft picks.
That's an interesting topic that hasn't really been talked much about as far as the draft capital for next year. Not that a general manager goes into a draft thinking, okay, I need to acquire more picks, but if the secondary benefit is, all right, I just added a future third or fourth to increase what I have in the future, because I think every general manager would prefer more picks as opposed to less picks, because those day three picks or even a third round pick, you can use those picks, package them to move up, whether that's in the second round or first round, to get a player you really, to use Monty Austin Ford's words, are convicted about, and not have to wait and be patient for that player to fall to you. You want to go out and get that player.
Yeah, and that's kind of the fun part, is seeing all that unfold of all these conversations and scenarios that are being discussed behind closed doors for all these months leading up to the draft. Of understandably so, everyone kind of thinks right now, right? Like, let's be in the moment. And there's so many decisions that play into that where you're also having to look ahead. So it'll be interesting to see. I would expect, and I'm not just talking in the first round, I would expect to see some sort of movement in trades. But even if it's not in the first round, again, maybe later, looking ahead for draft capital.
The 11 draft picks, the most the Cardinals have had since 2019, when they had 11 picks, in addition to Jalen Thompson, who was a supplemental pick. So whether you include that or not. But that draft class, all but tight end Caleb Wilson made the roster. He ended up on the practice squad. But that's year one, and then you get 3-4 years down the road. It's darn near impossible for your entire draft class, when you have upwards of 8, 9, 10 picks, to still be with your team. It's, even if they're all hit, which they never do, you can't pay all of them after their 4 years or 5 years are up. It's not possible.
Also, it's not necessary. I mean, you have a draft every year. There are some players, there are some positions where if you can get a rotational piece for 2-3 years, when you're looking at all of maybe the stars you're adding around them, like that can be enough. And you kind of rotate those rotational players. So I don't have any expectation that even as many are 8 or 9. Well, I'm sorry, the numbers in my head. I would expect no more than maybe like around 8 to really have an impact within this first year or two of just rotational pieces. It's just, it's not, you can, again, you can have a better option when you have 11 picks to have these players come in and have a role for you. But it's just not realistic for any team, not just the staff here or the picks they're going to make. It's not realistic for any team to expect 11 picks to all come in and all be starters or all be rotational pieces unless they have to step up the way the rookies did last year due to injury.
And that's a good point. The reason the Cardinals had darn near every one of their rookies a year ago outside of John Gaines contribute is a large part because of the injuries, especially on the defensive line and the uncertainty at cornerback. All of a sudden, guys get pressed into duty. And then, of course, do you stay there or not? Keytrell Clark couldn't stay there. Had to go back and then figure out, all right, where do I fit in with this team? But on the subject of 11 picks, you and I spent some time together in Indianapolis at the Scouting Combine 2 months ago. Almost seems longer than that, considering how much we talked about the draft. But we had the opportunity to talk to a number of different people. All the interviews up on the Arizona Cardinals official YouTube channel. But one of the players that we did, or one of the people that we did speak to, ESPN draft analyst Matt Miller, talking about what he had written earlier, and that is why he believes the Cardinals here in 2024 control the draft.
It's the draft capital that they have, not just a number four overall, but to have multiple first-round picks. And when I look at how many selections you have in the top 100, that's how you can control the draft. But also, it is a pivot point. If we see three quarterbacks come off the board in the top three, you control the draft at four because all those other position players are still available. So I think every mock draft that I will do now, between now and April 25th, will have Marvin Harrison Jr. at four. But what if there's a trade-out scenario like last year? You know, what if there's a situation where you're willing to, you know, fall in love with a Malik Nabers or a Roma Dunze or maybe someone who's not even in that conversation and slide back a couple of picks? So I think Arizona's in a, you know, really fascinating spot, much like last year, where you can make a decision that really changes the outcome of the first round.
General Manager Monty Ossenfort focused on the trenches early in last year's draft with a fourth overall pick. It's not just a deep wide receivers class this year, also with offensive tackles. Yeah. When it comes to a skill position like a wide receiver, how do you assess the risk of going that route rather than attacking the line of scrimmage?
Yeah, and I think it's you try to put every player in a bubble and evaluate them singularly, you know, but it is such a good offensive tackle class. To your point, Joe Alt from Notre Dame is a tremendous player. Olufoshana from Penn State, really good player. Talise Fuaga from Oregon State. Like, these guys would be the number one tackle in almost every draft class that we've had recently. So I think it is interesting, especially with, I was a huge Paris Johnson fan last year. You know, I think, you know, we'll see if he slides over to the left side with the TJ Humphries injury, but that is, you know, the risk of offensive tackles, I think it's bigger than wide receivers. Early in the draft, you know, we've seen some struggles from guys, or maybe it's year two or year three before it really kicks in for them. Whereas now with wide receivers, it used to be, you know, only Anquan Boldin had like a 1,000-yard rookie season. Now every first-round wide receiver, it feels like, has a 1,000-yard season. So I think it's become a position where you get much better, you know, impact right away.
We learned a lot, and thanks to Matt Miller for joining us back in Indianapolis at the Scouting Combine, but we learned a little bit about what Monty values when it comes to the draft last year. Moving from 3 to 12 back to 6 to get likely the player he was going to select at number 3 overall if a trade package didn't materialize, and that is Paris Johnson Jr. and offensive tackle, the line of scrimmage. I think we learn a little bit more about Monty this go-around, especially with that 4th overall pick. If it's a stick and pick and it's a wide receiver, okay, does that say something about how he values the wide receiver position, or just those three wide receivers that we've been talking about are just head and shoulders above everyone else and take precedent over a line of scrimmage player, or there's a draft package that is just too good to say no to and you move down and you figure out, all right, who's left, or can I go back up to try to get one of those wide receivers?
Yeah, I don't agree with all of those points. I don't think that if Ossenfort trades down, it's because he doesn't value a wide receiver. I think it's because they have so many needs that they can take advantage of that capital. And because
he got an offer he couldn't refuse.
Because that this draft has multiple positions where it's so deep that you can still kind of get the best of both worlds. I think it's not so much, again, about, okay, he drafted a wide receiver at 4. That means he values it so much more. You know, if he doesn't, he doesn't value the line of scrimmage as much as we thought. I don't think that's true at all. I think it has to do with what's available and the ceilings and floors of these prospects. I think the fact that he brought in, Austin Fort brought in a starting left tackle in Jonah Williams in free agency tells you he does value the trenches. I think it tells you he also values wide receivers and that he's expecting to probably get some good wide receivers. And so that's why he looked at the tackles in free agency. And when you're looking at this offensive line, you can say that with the exception of a left guard, you have all of your starters. You have a lot more holes of wide receivers. You have Michael Wilson out wide, and then what? Greg Dortch, Zach Pascal. I mean, there's just holes. I am not able to sit here and say that it's definitive that if the Cardinals draft a wide receiver at 4, Austin Fort doesn't value the trenches the way we thought he did. And I also don't think I can't sit here and say if he trades down, it's because he doesn't value the wide receiver position. I personally don't think either of those are true.
Where we sit here, a little over 24 hours away from when the Cardinals are on the clock, do you believe Monty knows what he wants to do? Or is he still waiting, push that envelope, deadline spur decisions, trying to get a team to add an extra pick in order to move up?
I think he knows what he wants to do in different scenarios. I think that is dependent to a certain degree upon the Patriots at pick number 3. And if they take a quarterback, if they stay at 3, and that's going to affect what teams are willing to call and offer on the phone as well. But I mean, he's got to know what he wants to do in situations of New England drafting a quarterback, New England trading out, right? Like, who's calling up? What are they willing to slide down for?
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports. You see him sometimes on Sundays, part of the CBS NFL package. He had a column, I believe it was late on Tuesday night, and he wrote that Monty, quote, has at least 2 trade back offers in hand. Earlier on Wednesday, from Detroit, Ian Rappaport on the Pat McAfee Show. Cardinals asking price may be too high for teams to come up to number 4, but deadlines cause action. I think there's a lot of back and forth here, and perhaps teams utilizing these NFL experts, these talking heads, to get certain narratives out in the open, for one reason or another. And I do think we're going to see something that no one has thought about or that's going to catch some people by surprise. Not teams, but the public. And it might be, to your point, number 3 with the Patriots. Is it Drake May? Is it J.J. McCarthy? Is there a team that really values all 4 of these quarterbacks as a top 5 selection? That's really, I think, the big question here is, yeah, we know Caleb Williams is going number 1. We think Jaden Daniels is going 2. So are there teams, the Giants, Vikings, that value a Drake May and a J.J. McCarthy at that level of a top 5 pick? Or do you think, we think those teams, based off the draft board and where we rank them, we think maybe McCarthy slides a little bit or a Drake May slides a little bit?
Yeah, there is so much that goes into deciding for a team to draft a player that the public's unaware of. It is much more than the highlights that you see rotating around Twitter or the numbers that you are seeing at the combine or the throws you are seeing at a scheduled pro day. There's a lot that goes into it of these interviews that are behind closed doors and testing players, how fast they can read a defense or what they're seeing on certain plays and their football knowledge and how coachable they are. There are off the field issues that the public doesn't know about, because when you're in college, right, things may or may not be able to be a little more hidden, a little more secretive, that teams have access to that may or may not be a problem or a pattern. And there's just so much that goes into this decision to where, understandably, because the public doesn't have knowledge of those things, where you're thinking, what on earth? But so much research is put into this. I don't necessarily see the Chargers at 5 as a wild card, and maybe that's just because I'm not super deep into Chargers draft coverage. I think they could be like a funky pick, right? Of like, people assume they're going to do a wide receiver, or they assume they're going to take a tackle, but like with Harbaugh, do they go crazy and take running back? Do they go defense? Do they trade? I think the Chargers are kind of a funky team to maybe keep an eye on as well.
They might just be a funky team all year round with Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah,
Jim Harbaugh and funky, that just kind of goes hand in hand. The man just got a tattoo. Did you see the video of that? The big M and the undefeated. And he's living in an RV in San Diego,
I didn't see
in
that.
LA right now. So yeah, that's funky. That we might have to remember that because the Chargers and Cardinals are going to meet this upcoming season. Bring up the quarterbacks and the fact that there might be teams that value certain quarterbacks higher than others. Charles Davis, who we also had a chance to speak to in Indianapolis at the Scouting Combine, his final mock draft. Yes, quarterbacks go 1, 2, and 3. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy to the Patriots. Cardinals stick and pick Marvin Harrison Jr. And then he has quarterbacks going 11, 12, and 13. Drake May to the Vikings drops all the way to 11 outside the top 10. Bo Nix to the Broncos. Michael Penix Jr. to the Raiders.
Interesting.
Drake May dropping out of the top 10, or J.J. McCarthy dropping out of the top 10.
I don't necessarily see that as super crazy, because you're going to get to a point in the draft where teams don't need a quarterback. So if you're not drafted maybe in the top 4 or 5, assuming that a team can't trade up, these quarterbacks are going to drop. So I don't really think that is a super wild prediction, because you're going to get, again, to that middle range of, you know, middle in terms of the first 14, 15 picks, where teams are just not going to need a quarterback and someone's going to slide.
It's fascinating because you're right. You look at where the Cardinals are, don't need a quarterback. Chargers, don't need a quarterback. The Giants, are they married to Daniel Jones? Contractually, yes, but can teams work their way out of those contracts? Sure, but that's another potential where you don't take a quarterback. The Titans, Will Levis, is that someone that you want to be attached to at the hip? Falcons, well, they just, what's the, why am I blanking on the Falcons' new quarterback? Oh, Kirk Cousins. But that's only a 1 or 2 year deal.
A lot of these teams are in not the same situation as the Cardinals, but are more or less in a transition phase as well.
Bears at number 9, well, they're going to draft Caleb Williams at number 1. And the Jets at 10, Aaron Rodgers. But that's, again, how long is that? When you talk about GMs looking past 2024, who's to say you're ever going to be in this position with a top 10 pick to draft a quarterback that you really, really like? So would it be a surprise? I think it would be, but when you really think about it, not that far-fetched to see one of those four quarterbacks drop out of the top 10.
Expect the unexpected, Craig.
Yes, and knowing the fact that since you and I have been working together here with the Arizona Cardinals, a lot of the unexpected has happened when it comes to the first round. We've had trades. We've had no picks at all. By the way, going back to our original conversation about 1, 2, 3, or 4 first-round picks to deal with on Friday, I'm going to guarantee that there will be at least one first-round pick. We will not have a repeat performance when the Cardinals' lone pick was traded to the Baltimore Ravens for Hollywood Brown.
Yeah, I would feel pretty confident in that one as well.
But we just don't know exactly what Monty Austin Fort will do right now. As we go back to our time in Indianapolis at the Scouting Combine, another one of the experts that we had a chance to sit down and get some knowledge from, Lance Zierlein, NFL Network draft analyst, asked him what he expects from Monty Austin Fort.
It could go trade or Monty again, where you move back and you keep adding to your draft capital so that you can maneuver around and get the guys you like. I don't think it'd be the worst idea in the world if the Giants got itchy for a quarterback and they went from 6 to 4. I mean, I'd be willing to do that deal, and I'm still going to get my hands on either Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. Probably, if New England goes, I think quarterback is 1-2. If New England goes quarterback, then to me, it's an easy wide receiver pick. Who's your favorite? Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, or Marvin Harrison Jr. at 4, which I do think there's a little more variety of opinions on that than the fan bases understand. It's not automatically Marvin Harrison Jr. And then beyond that, if you really want to play the game, you can say, okay, we'll trade back to, let's say, 6, and we'll let you take your quarterback there. You want to know exactly who they're taking before you make the move. You pick up draft capital, maybe a second-round pick, and then that allows you to get your wide receiver at 6, either Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. probably, and then you come flying up from the second round with your additional pick, maybe 2 seconds, and you go get a tackle. So you can play it both ways. When you're able to trade back and be smart about it and add draft capital, you can really maneuver the draft and play the draft game on draft day intelligently. And it doesn't just end on the first round. I mean, second, third rounds are – this is where teams are built on day two as well.
So you're saying if the Cardinals don't – if they do trade back but not too far, you would still prioritize a wide receiver,
yeah,
the way things fall, over a tackle?
Absolutely, because that means that there would be four quarterbacks, boom, 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 like that. And to me, the two best players in the draft are wide receivers. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. and, for me, Malik Nabers, those are the two best players in the draft. So, yeah, I get the best player in the draft who happens to be a huge position of need, and I'll lean on leveraging your need for a quarterback, like with the Texans when they had to do what they did. I'll leverage that to go get a draft pick out of you and then maneuver around if I want to go handle another position of need.
Again, that was 2 months ago, and you're hearing a lot of the same thing. You're hearing more of what Lance Zierlein had a chance to talk to us about back in Indianapolis at the scouting combine. Quote, it's not automatically Marvin Harrison Jr. There is a segment out there, scouts, team personnel, that do not have MHJ as number one.
You say that confidently?
Yes, I do. It's not unanimous.
Okay, right. But I don't also know that it's split into thirds.
Oh, you're, you know,
so
I, yeah.
Like, clarify that of like, yeah, it might not be unanimous, but realistically, majority of the teams probably have Marvin Harrison Jr. as their top receiver. After that, it's kind of finding the little things of if one really fits better with your system, your quarterback, what you're trying to do. And just, yeah, a quick reminder, this was 2 months ago. So when talking about a tackle as a need right after signing Jonah Williams, that's not so much as high of a need as it was at the time at the combine. Not saying the Cardinals, it wouldn't make sense to maybe take a tackle later on in the first round or top of two, but just as a reminder hearing that.
It's not going to be a number four option.
Yes.
You're not drafting a tackle
Correct.
At number four. But at 11, 12, 13, absolutely. I would certainly consider drafting an offensive tackle. The wide receiver discussion is fascinating because you're right. It's not 50-50, but is it 75% of the league believes MHJ is number one? Is it more than that? Is it less than that? And then where do the Cardinals fall in that category? Do they have MHJ number one? I've said it a lot, Danny, because if the Cardinals do stick and pick and Marvin Harrison is on the board and he is not the selection, I'm going to feel real bad for Paul Calvisi. Even worse than when I talk about the weather situation and what he might deal with on the road.
Look, again, fans are entitled to get attached to a player and love a player from what you see. But again, reminder, there's a lot that goes into a decision, and they're allowed to feel how they feel. But just keep that in mind.
And as Monty told the assembled media a week ago, you'd never fall in love with a player. You have conviction about a player that you're selecting at that particular time.
Right.
And many of the fan base, not only have they fallen in love, they have all kinds of conviction about Marvin
sure
Harrison
do.
Jr. By the way, I mentioned Paul. You can hang out with Paul Calvisi at the draft party on Thursday at the Great Lawn outside of State Farm Stadium, Thursday, April 25th, 4 to 9. Cardinals cheerleaders, Cardinals players. There'll be a post-draft fireworks show. Admission, parking are free. You do need to sign up, though. Go to azcardinals.com/draft party. That is azcardinals.com/draft party. And then we'll get a firsthand account of how things went on Friday during our Draft Central show at 3 p.m. on the Arizona Cardinals official YouTube channel, also online, and also on X, formerly known as Twitter.
Don't call it that. Lots of articles, cover two podcasts, lots and lots of coverage on azcardinals.com, our social channels, and official YouTube channel.
There'll be a lot of work, but it's been a long time talking about it, and I'm ready
yeah,
for it to be in the
rearview
mirror.
Yeah, for all the people commenting, yeah, enough speculation. I mean, we feel the same way, but the draft is approaching, so sorry.
All right, one more item of speculation, and I'm not going to hold you to it. What do you think happens Thursday night? Roger Goodell says the Arizona Cardinals are on the clock.
I think the Cardinals stay at four, and I think they take Marvin Harrison Jr. And from there, I'm kind of up in the air. I'm not fully set that the Cardinals stay at 27. I could see a trade up from 27 in the first round to really get a player that the Cardinals have their eye on. Or somehow doing a bundle and trading up from the second. I'm not sure, but that I feel more set in my gut that they will stick and pick at four. And if there's movement in the first round, it's going to be based around 27.
Moving up a couple of spots, maybe jumping to 19, 20 to land a cornerback or an edge rusher that perhaps drops because quarterbacks go high, wide receivers go high, offensive tackles go high, pushing those defensive players at two positions of need for the Arizona Cardinals going into this season.
Right, but players they probably don't expect to slide to 27. And since you have the capital and you have the conviction to move up for one of these players rather than wait, that's what my gut is telling me.
And not just to do it as the fact that we're on opposite sides, my gut is, and it's legit, I do think Monty is going to get that offer that is just too good to pass, whether that's to six and you still get one of those wide receivers. To me, that would be the most beneficial scenario.
Yeah.
Because you're not leaving the first round without a true number one wide receiver, provided the Cardinals believe that all three, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Roma Dunze, are that generational talents at the position. And then if you drop to 11, 12, or 13, can Monty do it again? Can he move back up to 7, to 8, to 9, maybe even to 5, and work the magic, and then we can all see it on the new episode of Cardinals Flight Plan and just how calm Monty is, and you have JG and you have Michael Bidwell just sitting there smiling, much like us, reacting in real time in awe of someone work the phones. And again, that was a product of those 10 particular minutes, but it was weeks worth of work to allow Monty to be so calm in that moment a year ago.
Yeah, it would definitely, look, that wouldn't surprise me. It would definitely make for an interesting and entertaining night.
Won't hold any of us to those scenarios.
Okay.
But in other words, just be on your toes.
I can do that much.
Okay. And again, the Draft Central show coming up on Friday, 3 p.m. on the Arizona Cardinals official YouTube channel. Myself, Danny, and we're going to let Paul join. Is that the...
Yeah, why not?
Okay, just for the heck of it?
Sure.
Okay. Put him to work as well. All right, Bird Gang, I mean, this is it. I mean, the next time
we
speak to you here on Cardinals Cover 2 or any other platform for that matter, we're going to know. And we can actually talk about real players in this building that can help the Arizona Cardinals get to the playoffs and hopefully an extended postseason run.
It's about time.
Amen to that. And on that note, we will put a lid on this edition of Cardinals Cover 2 presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. As always, special thanks to our executive producer, Jim Almahandro, our associate producer, Cody Fincher. For Danny Sarek, I'm Craig Riolu. We'll talk to you next time here on Cardinals Cover 2.